Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hello, my name is John Palmer, and I am a home brewer! Okay, I'll keep working on it, yeah. Sorry. Good to see you, Jamil.
See, I get y'all fired up. That's what Plissé used to do to me during the show. You give me all, get, start slapping me around for a bit, get the blood flowing.
Yep.
Really did something, you know. And let's see here. We're drinking a Midnight Sun Brewing Monk's Mistress.
Yeah. Which and is, the fact that it's 11.5% has nothing to do with my improved attitude.
Right. It's going to help the Q&A show.
Yeah, Belgian style special dark ale, they call it. It's big. It's, Midnight Sun, they win the San Francisco Barley Wine Festival multiple times their barley wine, so they know they're big beers.
Well, and they have that their own festival up there in Alaska too.
Yeah, the Barley Wine Festival, yeah.
And every time I've had one of their beers, I've really enjoyed it, even the ones that aren't barley wine. So I've never seen this one down here in our area. I saw it on the shelf down at City Beer there in San Francisco, and I just thought, I haven't had a bad experience yet, so I'll give it a shot.
I thought you said so we were going to do a road trip up to Alaska for the Barley Wine Festival.
You got the RV. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Is that heat working, that thing?
Yeah. I think it's in February, though, isn't it?
It is. And I've been wanting to go to it for years.
Headlights working,
Sully goes every year and invites me. Come on, you got to go. Uh-huh. And I just, for some reason, I can never make it. We ought to put that on the list, Jamil.
Yeah. There you go.
Be fun.
I think we could go. We just need an invite. Somebody to help defray the costs.
That's the thing now. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, back when I was a big software mogul, it didn't matter so much. But now,
right?
Yeah, you know, if you can help put gas in the car, that helps me out.
You'll do just about anything.
That's right. If I need to, that's what we're all about here at the Brewing Network. Whatever we need to do to, whatever tricks we need to do to
make ends meet.
Yeah,
make ends meet. That's why I work with so many Johns. Johns all over the place. I got my John Palmer. I got my good friend John Tull. I've got my great sponsor, John Blickman, BlickmanEngineering.com, Blickman with two N's. Go check it out. John Blickman is paying for the show, so you don't have to.
And we got another sponsor.
And you want to make sure you get to Blickman Engineering. Mm-hmm. Send them an email. Tell them you appreciate that they sponsor the show and take care of us so we can bring this this fine programming to you.
Yes.
And, you know, John is, real interested in meeting up with homebrewers and giving back. And we got a great promotion going.
Yep, we do.
Where me and two Johns will come out. And in this case, it's going to be a John Palmer and a John Blickman. If you buy a Blickman top tier system between now and January 31st of 2011, you get entered in a drawing, and the winner is going to have the three of us come out to your location, and we will brew with you on your Blickman top tier system.
Right. We can help you set it up, or you can set up ahead of time, and we'll just help you brew on it. But we will come out to your place. Should be a great time.
I think we come out. You and Blickman can put it together. You and Blickman can help brew. I will drink beer. Mm-hmm. Look pretty.
I will offer advice.
For advice, yeah.
Backseat brewing kind of thing.
Yeah, my advice would be my drink's empty. I need another, please. So I'm looking forward to that. That is going to be a blast. The three of us, one location, you'll have a grand old time. So if you've been thinking about buying a Blickman top tier system, purchase that bad boy now and get yourself in on this.
Yourself an early Christmas present.
Right, right. And I think, the odds of winning are going to be far better than the lottery.
That's for sure.
And the prize is far better. What do you want? $300 million or, Palmer, Blickman, and myself to come out and visit? Really? Is there any question of that?
Hmm.
Oh, don't ruin it for me.
Oh, sorry.
So check out BlickmanEngineering.com. And another of my favorite Johns that I'm working with now is John Preston, Grain and Grape, in Australia. Right. Yeah, check it out. Grain and Grape, grain and is spelled out, grainandgrape.com.au, out near Melbourne. If you're in Melbourne area, swing on by. It's a beautiful shop. Lots of great stuff on hand.
Good selection.
Very knowledgeable people. And they also sell mail order, so you can get to their website. Check that out and send John some email. Tell him he's one of my favorite Johns. And he is a really nice guy.
Appreciate him sponsoring the show.
Yeah. Just tell him that you appreciate it. And, while you're there, buy some stuff. Really. It's not going to hurt you. You can use it. You can use it for brewing. Trust me. Good stuff there. And quality ingredients. Good guy, quality ingredients, and he deserves our support. So I think, we got this yeast book done. Chris mm-hmm. White, myself.
It's a nice book. Reads really well.
Yeah, you read the whole thing. You went through it. And your comments were, gee, Chris should have done it by himself. Wasn't that your first comment?
I don't think I said that. But it was very well written. A real presentable style. Addressing common questions. As you're reading through a topic, you start thinking to yourself, well, what about this? And it's the next paragraph. So I mean, mm-hmm. you and Chris did a great job of presenting, yeast knowledge, technical help.
And it's the thing I like about it is, Chris and I both agreed at the beginning, it should be more of a practical guide, not like, yeast theory for, PhDs to, discuss all the cutting edge stuff, but rather, all right, give to me in a practical application. How do I do this? How do I, work with yeast? How do I make the most of my yeast? How do I make selections of yeast? How do I, set up a lab? How do I, what tests do I do? What are the steps or tests? I've heard of, viability testing. How do I do it? All these things, right. Troubleshooting, all that stuff is in the book. And I'm very proud that, we got all that information in there. And it's a good, handbook for, whether you're just starting out in brewing, I think, there's a lot of useful information. I'd read How to Brew first, and then I would get into this book and go through. There's a lot of good information there on fermentation. And then, if you've got a lot of experience, I think this book's still valid. And, if you're running a small brew pub or a craft brewery, there's a lot of information in there and setting up a moderate lab to do a lot of the testing. We have testing for breweries in there and a lot of stuff. We cover both the small craft brewer and the home brewer in both, mm-hmm. Whether it's propagation or, starters and all that.
Yeah, the Brewers Association is taking that view or that direction with these books is that, making it both accessible to the home brewer, mm-hmm. but applicable to the craft brewer and the professional brewer, making sure that you've got the depth of the information there,
right.
if somebody needs it. Well, but at the same time, making it readily accessible. And
the applicable. Funny thing was, like on our Brewing Classic Styles, they presented this to home brewers, and they wanted an extract-based, and the number of pro brewers that bought that book is actually pretty surprising. they all got, they pick up a copy, just so they have, idea of, they'll be brewing their own, but, they, want some guidance on, all right, what's an award-winning recipe in this kind of style? What works well? What are the keys to the style? So that's what we do with Brewing Class Styles, but they didn't, sell it to the pro brewers. They sold it to home brewers, but pro brewers, they pick this stuff up too. Now, I don't know if I'm leaking something I shouldn't be leaking. No, don't be looking down for fluid leaking on my chair. I'm talking about your water book. You got a water book you've been working on.
Colin Kaminsky and I are working on a water book, and it's not due for a publication for a couple of years yet. But yeah, the Brewers Association is looking, yeast, water, malt, hops, mm-hmm. Making a treatise on each of these subjects that, like I said, is accessible to homebrewers and yet applicable to professional brewers.
Mm-hmm.
One that bridges the both areas.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're working on that.
Cool. I think that'll be a good one. And I'm sure with you and Colin together, either the book will be 1,200 pages, or it will be it's sure to cover everything you need to know about.
Should
water.
Be comprehensive, but yeah, we're going to keep it
practical.
Practical.
Focus on the practical. Yeah.
Something
the application
you can read
of
one
knowledge.
Sitting in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, the question I always have about these books, the water book, and I had it, you were talking about how it's kind of for everybody, the yeast book.
Mm-hmm.
But I did, and I mean this from a serious perspective. You guys know how I am, and I can be technical when necessary if
right,
it helps
right.
me get to a good beer. But otherwise, I'm not so interested.
Right.
And so, and it's one of the reasons I've said this a lot of times, why I love How to Brew. Because I can just kind of thumb through for the basics, or on the time
the
I'm having
pictures.
Trouble, or the pretty pictures, if I'm having trouble, or if I have a topic on the show I really need to know about, I can. It's in depth. So I was curious about this from the yeast book. Can mm-hmm. a guy like me, because yeast, that really is beyond my scope. When I get into yeast, mm-hmm. I really get confused. And
right.
so is it something that I can get into also, or is it, or am I
so.
Too basic?
I really think so. And especially there's sections on, things like starters and, fermentation temperatures, high gravity brewing, things like that, where I think, it gives you a good understanding without getting into too much of the biology of the yeast. We tried to avoid any biology of the yeast section. We felt like we got to have at least some of the basics. And you could actually skip over that or just kind of quickly skim through it and then get into the, more of the how you do it. But it really is, a practical approach. So I think there's a lot of useful information for everybody. And I dislike books that, try and teach you absolutely everything about something, because it's impossible to, learn, everything about yeast. So a quick history, a quick biology lesson, and then into the practical. So,
but I even really like when it's both, and that's kind of what I mean, because there are times when I do need to go, and that's why, again, I love How to Brew. So I guess I just was hoping that the yeast book would do the same. I mean, I just started using the damn yeast calculator.
I think it bridges the two very well.
For heaven's sake.
See? And you used it on
I
your
used it
clone
well. It worked.
Example of a mirror pond.
Right.
And you brew it.
So I just like books like that that can be at least span as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, all right, good. I'm glad to hear that, Jimmy.
Yeah. Well, in all these books, you can pick them up in the Brewing Network store. You go to thebrewingnetwork.com/store. They got a whole section of books in there, and you get these signed books. So, while you're here, you gotta send some more books.
I will.
Yeah. And you can get Brewing Classic Style signed. You get How to Brew signed. You can get when the yeast book is out in just after GABF. By the time, if you're listening to podcasts, then that's probably now.
Yeah.
You can get them at the Brewing Network, and they're signed by both Chris White and myself. And a good portion of the book sale goes to the Brewing Network. So you're really helping us out by purchasing these books. And I think you're helping yourselves out. These books I really believe in. Good quality books. Good information. And speaking of good information, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll get right into the live Q&A session. Back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
When you hear
Blickman Engineering. Think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Whether I'm making me dry stout or rebuilding me kegs, I head to the heart of dear Dublin for me homebrewing supplies.
You head all the way back to Emerald Isle just for a wee batch of grain or a bit of keg tubing?
No, you moronic waste of liver. Dublin, California. I go to HopTech.
For 30 years, HopTech in Dublin, California has been supplying homebrewers with malt extract, fresh grains, hops, spices and sugars, hop oils and extracts, and much more. HopTech is one of the first homebrew supply shops on the internet and is proud to offer award-winning beer kits, both online and in their store.
Mention the BN Army for a 10% discount off your order.
The store is open every day except Wednesday, or shop online at hoptech.com anytime. HopTech is run by passionate, award-winning brewers who live, love, and travel for beer and bring their experience to the store for you.
If you don't want to visit Dublin, just call toll-free 800-DRY-HOPS or go to hoptech.com.
Visit HopTech today in Dublin, California and at hoptech.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew Free or Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
Okay, I rolled a 15 and I get a +2 from my yeast starter.
Nope, sorry, you failed your roll. Your beer is infected.
No way!
You had to beat a 24. It's schizosaccharomyces.
This sucks! I just failed versus oxidation! Our party is fracked! Doug's the only one left and his beer is a Berliner Weiss!
What's this? A tea party?
Hey, this is a brew session, man. Get lost!
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Does your significant other know the difference between an Irish red ale and a Flanders red ale? Do you burp, strizzle, spalt, and fart Y-Yeast 2308? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the socially awkward Patter's beer and the sci-fi convention. Convention Showstopper number 8. Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by 2.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainashef and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. Live Q&A show. If you're listening live for the Brewing Network, you can go to that thebrewingnetwork.com and click on the Chat Now button, and you can get right in and ask questions live. Or you can... We're going to open up the phone lines, and if you want to call in at 1-888-401-BEER or 2337. 1-888-401-2337. We'll take those live on the air, unscreened. So don't be a jerk off. Have a brewing question
or a bill collector
or a bill collector. Yeah, or a owner of a limo service that you vomited in.
Yeah,
that's fine. And we'll get those on the air and we'll answer them. Yep. We'll have
Sounds
some fun.
Good to me. Yep.
I mean, back in the day, we didn't because
you have questions about Justin. We can answer them.
Yeah. No, we can't.
Oh, okay.
We can't answer those. I mean, we can answer them on the surface, but deep down, we really don't know the reason for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right.
We'll speculate with the best of them.
That's right. So we got our first question.
All right. SoCal Brewer in the chat today says he was cleaning out his beer fridge and found some Y yeast, Fat Tire, and Pac-Man yeast. Manufactured, let's see, the Fat Tire was December of 07 and the Pac-Man was March of 08.
Mm-hmm.
How long is too long to see if these are still viable? They were in his fridge, keep in mind.
Right. So chances are there's still some viable cells in there. The thing is, you know, you worry about, you know, mutation, things like that in storage. That's one of the reasons why they store yeast at minus 80 C is that it slows down the rate of mutation drastically. The warmer it is, the more the rate of mutation. So that's one of the problems there. But what I would do is just go ahead and pop them and, you know, see if they swell up over the course of a week. And it's always possible that, you know, there may be some bacteria in there, but and that's doing it. But that's pretty rare. Generally, it's the yeast, and those few cells will grow and get going. And then take the product of that and put it in, you know, about a liter of 1020 wort, you know, about 5 Play-Doh,
mm-hmm.
and try growing it up in there, see what happens. And then, you know, from there, you can go into a standard, you know, 1035 to 1040, 9 to 10 Play-Doh wort, and grow it up from there. The thing to be very careful about when you're messing with these kinds of things is sanitation, because you have so few yeast cells and it's going to take so long for it to grow. You really need to be careful that you're not going to end up growing up a lot of bacteria. So be very diligent about sanitation. And also, you know, mutation, things like that. When you get to a certain point where you think the yeast is going well and you're growing enough yeast and it seems clean, make yourself a test beer, you know, just a couple of liters, something like that. Grow it up. Just use extract and grow it up and see what it tastes like. And if it tastes okay, then your yeast is probably okay. Mm-hmm. And then you can go from there. But again, with all these steps, with all this handling, with all this slow growth, you know, the chances for contamination can be a real problem. But you should be able to recover the yeast from it.
What warning signs would you look for when you taste, you know, for it not to be okay?
Right. You know, sourness, any sort of medicinal or plastic or band-aid.
High phenolics, kinda.
You know, also any sort of weird off character, you know, high diacetyl, high acetaldehyde, things like that, okay. You know, might give you an indication. Anything that's, you know, may seem kind of excessively sulfury or meaty or things like that.
Any bad beer flavor means it's not going to ferment.
Anything
well.
Stringy, things like that. Yeah, you see any ropiness forming, things like that. Could be an issue as well.
All right. More yeast questions. Good thing that book's coming out. This listener says, I'm wanting...
I'll buy the book.
See, every time Jamil comes out with a book, he stops answering questions on the shows.
Right.
All right. I'm wanting to harvest my lager yeast, he says. And on the yeast washing episode, you stress the importance of getting yeast from all layers, early flock, settlers, and late.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean that to harvest my lager yeast, I should wash from the primary and store, then wash from my lagering and store, and then combine the two into a starter?
Well, see, you know, when you're working like a cylinder conical fermenter and they get the yeast layers, then you're targeting that middle layer of yeast is considered, you know, the best of the, you know, not too early flocculating, not too late. Because the late flocculating yeast is a problem. The early flocculating yeast is a problem. Generally, you can collect from just the primary. Now, if you are, you know, shorting your primary, and there's a lot of yeast left in suspension, then that can be a problem, and you may need to collect from both. But if you leave the beer in the primary until it drops clear, and the beer seems fairly bright, then you've got all the yeast that you need. The ones that are still staying there after that point, you may not actually need those. Those are the ones that are really very non-flocculant, and if you start harvesting and repitching those, you can end up with a real dusty beer where the yeast don't flocculate at all. Chris White, when I was starting out, he was telling me that the lager yeasts, you know, when people do that where they all the primary yeast is tossed, and then the secondary, they collect that off after like a month, they get another fine layer and they start repitching that. He said the very next repitch, you can end up with a yeast that's so dusty it never flocks. And your beer is just murky and you never get rid of it. So that yeast generally you can toss.
Sounds good.
Okay. Wood is in the chat room.
Wood.
Yeah. Now he wants to know exactly how do you use gelatin? A friend of his, another home brewer, said poured him a beer and he used gelatin in it. And Andy thought that it was filtered. It was so clear. But he doesn't use fining, but was really impressed with the results. Just doesn't know how to use the gelatin, only has heard use gelatin. So what do you think, guys?
Well, you mix up the gelatin. It knocks unflavored.
Right. Yeah, you need to dissolve it in a warm enough water. Generally, you can boil the water and then cool it down and a little bit and then add your gelatin until it dissolves. You don't want to go too hot.
No. But it's like, what, 100, 110, you know, warm to the touch.
It'll be on the package.
Yeah. And then you just gently pour it in, stir it in.
Right.
And let it settle. That's, as far as I know, that's all you have to do. It's pretty simple stuff.
I don't like that you're calling Andy stupid.
Andy, you're stupid.
That was my intention.
Okay.
Where's Kim when you need her?
She's in there, too. She just didn't have any intelligent questions.
See, and she knows when to keep her mouth shut. Unlike Andy.
No, I guess gelatin is just, it's fairly foolproof.
It's right, but aren't there? But it's been a long time since I used gelatin. Aren't there? You know, I think what Andy's asking, you know, for optimum performance, Andy's not stupid. I'm just kidding. For optimum performance, you know, isn't there temperatures to use gelatin at, and dosing rates, and things like that that really do best?
I'm sure there are.
It's probably in a book somewhere.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have not used it very much myself.
Right.
Lots of friends have, but I've not had. When I often use isinglass, or I don't fine at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the experience with gelatin that some of my friends do. But
I got to the point where I skip fining altogether. It's just like, I'll just wait.
Yeah. But I think it's one package for a five gallon corny keg. And
do you put it in the keg pre-carbonation, post-carbonation? Does it matter?
I don't think it matters. I mean, you know, certainly vent the keg before you try to take the lid off. But
so essentially, the beer is done.
Yeah, the beer,
and then you add your findings.
Right.
To condition it.
Yeah. There's a good website with the gelatin information on it. Brewer Supply or something. They have a whole thing on fining and all the different findings.
Yeah, it.
So I think he's stumped the panel here. We really don't know all the answers.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, I believe that is the case. We're not
fully. So Andy's not the dumb one in this room right now.
No,
no, you are.
I am. Well, that's always the case.
Where's Biscuit?
All right. Okay, I have a question about. We talk about the pronunciation of this one, diacetyl.
Right. Yeah, we did.
Is that right?
Yeah. Diacetyl or diacetyl.
Diacetyl. That's also right.
Or diacetyl.
All right.
So diacetyl. Uh-huh.
Butt Kraken's back in the chat.
Butt Kraken.
He's got a question. He says, my last five beers have had the diacetyl in them. Not a significant amount, but enough to notice. It's kind of a slick, oily mouthfeel, too.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I've looked into the common issues that cause it. Low pitch rate, fermentation temps, infection, and oxygenation. I think he uses your pitch calculator, everything. I make starters for every batch, he says.
Mm-hmm.
I make them according to your calculator and the best by date on the vial.
Mm-hmm.
Infection has not been an issue in these beers.
Mm-hmm.
My friends and I hypothesize, he says, that over aerating was a problem.
Mm.
But my last batch, I only aerated for 30 seconds instead of the normal 1 minute that I do in a 2.5 gallon batch, he says.
Oh, but Kraken, I think you need to get on the phone and
explain the whole thing.
We can work this out. Because I got a lot of questions.
Beer.
I got a lot of questions. I mean, you know, what yeast strains are we talking about? What's the fermentation profile like? I mean, are we starting warm or starting cool?
Okay. I think he's still in the chat there. So 888-401-BEER.
Mr. Kraken.
Yeah. Give us a call. And
because, you know, certain yeast strains will produce a lot of diacetyl. You know, there's also a thing where, people, you know, mistake other flavors for diacetyl or diacetyl. You know, a lot of times you can have a caramel toffee kind of thing. And since toffee is quite closely related to, or associated
butter,
with butter
mm-hmm.
to make toffee, people kind of, you know, start to think butter. So it depends on, you know, what kind of recipe, yeast strain, and fermentation temperatures.
Okay. I think he's calling up now. I do see him in the chat. It'll just take a minute to get through. There's a little delay over there. Here we go. Butt Kraken, you on the line there?
Yes, me.
All right.
All right, Butt, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
All right.
I'm actually studying. Listen to the video.
Well, studying's the mistake right there. So on these batches of beer, what's the recipe like?
The recipe, they're actually
different.
Five different beers.
Okay, are all of them using, like, you know, heavy caramel, anything like that?
No.
They range from
as in you mean kettle caramelization or a lot of crystal malts?
Both. I mean,
there's only one that had a lot of
okay.
A barley wine that had a lot of caramelization in the kettle.
So
other than that, I'm not a big fan of crystal malt, so I don't use them that often.
Okay, all right. So you're getting this diacetyl kind of character in a, let's say, a pilsner, as well as okay. Now, and what kind of yeast are you using for these?
Okay, so the only one that technically should have diacetyl is the Bohemian Pilsner that I used. I used WLP 802. Mm-hmm. The other one should I used WLT 530, 400, mm-hmm. and then the rest were WLP 001 Cal Ale.
Okay, and you're sure it's diacetyl, or could it be something else, or that's real strong?
I don't get it in the nose, but my, I'm real bad at, I have pretty high tolerance for buttery nose or whatever, but I definitely get it in the mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple other homebrewers, they can get diacetyl as well.
Mm. Okay.
And these are all grain or extract, especially grain?
All grain, okay. Yeah.
And what about fermentation profile? Do you know what's a typical fermentation? You know, when do you pitch? What temperature do you pitch at? You know, and then where do you go from there?
I always pitch at the temperature I'm fermenting at, because these are all ales, obviously, except for the Pilsner. But I pitch that one also at 50 degrees.
Okay. And then
all the ales I pitched at the fermenting temperature.
Okay, so let's say you're pitching at 67 or 68, and then the beer starts fermenting and you see activity within a day or two at the most, or?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't catch all of that, but I do use a two-stage temp controller throughout the whole time, and it stays at that temperature until usually last quarter of fermentation. I slowly start ramping up about 1 degree, 2 degrees a day.
Okay, so yeah, that's an important part of reducing diacetyl right there. I was thinking maybe, you were clamping down on temperatures at the end and crash cooling it and all that, because that's one way that you can end up with it.
But when you say that you perceive it in the mouthfeel, I mean, you're saying that the beer, the mouthfeel of the beers is slicker than what you think it should be?
Yeah. Because most of these beers finish out pretty dry. I'm looking at my list right now. I've got 10-12, 10-10, 10-11, 10-9. And they're... It's dry until I get that oily mouthfeel when I'm tasting it, so...
You know, if there's truly is diacetyl in these beers, then I think it would have to come from some sort of contamination source.
Yeah,
PDO or something like that. However, I'm not 100% convinced that there's diacetyl in these.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and then.
I don't know. Where are you located?
I'm Southern California.
Would you be able to get beer to John or myself? John's down in Pomona?
Glendale.
Glendale. Or, ship some up to me. I'm up near Sacramento.
Yeah, that'd be fine. A couple of these I've already finished drinking, so...
Okay.
I can send up or whatever I have left.
Yeah, next time you feel like you got a beer that's exhibiting this, if you can send it to us, email us.
Mm-hmm.
And and we'll figure it out. I mean, one way or another, we'll get to the bottom of this. But it sounds like you're doing everything right. So that leaves us at a dead point where we gotta taste the beer now.
Yeah, I mean, a bacterial infection could be the source of the diacetyl, or it could be. I'm kind of wondering, depending on your mash temperatures and so on, maybe you're just maybe a high mash temp and you're getting a more dexterous mouthfeel than what you... Yeah. But you said finishing gravities are
fairly... Are you using any weird grains or anything that not common to the brew shop?
No, everything I buy is from more beer, so...
Okay. And it's, because sometimes people use, weird kind of specialty grains. I got a good friend in Southern California, Chad Stevens, who... he likes experimenting with all sorts of different grains, and some of them are oily, and he's quite the clever experimenter. But I was wondering if he's doing something like this. Okay, I don't think we can solve it for you today, but if you can get us, if you don't mind getting us some beer, we can taste that and see if we can figure it out, and we'll keep working with you on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely try to be more scrupulous about my sanitation, but yeah. I figured it was pretty good as it was, but
yeah, well, check your tubes, hoses.
Well, and one thing, does it get worse over time?
Actually, no, because I had at least one of them. I still have. I made a 5 gallon batch out of it. I had it before, and it got better over time until the hops dropped out, and then I started tasting more diacetyl out of it. So,
see, I wonder if we're talking maybe kind of an oxidation character of some of the malt compounds that kind of takes on a real weird kind of sweet flavor, or oxidation can also increase the level of diacetyl as well. So watch oxygen pickup. That might be another thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
But it doesn't sound like it'd be sanitation. If it's not getting worse, then sanitation's not the issue.
Right.
Yeah, it's not getting worse, but you never know. So I try to keep a couple samples over.
Okay.
Just leave them out covered, obviously.
Yeah.
Just to see if they're getting worse. But
All right, Mr. Kraken. Thanks for...
All right, thanks for the help, guys.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, bye. Kraken, are you Dan? Did you send an email as Dan also?
I did.
Okay, just checking. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Take care, brother.
How about a quick follow-up question before we go to break? Because Kim was listening, too, and she wants to know if...
Why Andy is so dim?
Yes. Yeah. Could too many raisins in a beer, like in a double or something, replicate a diacetyl aroma flavor?
Yeah, I don't think the raisins would. But, I think it. You know, all these flavor perceptions are so... You know, so difficult across a span of people to say. Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, sometimes you get a real kind of caramelly character and then people think, oh, you know, they relate it to toffee and then they're, you know, they're one step away from butter. So maybe, but generally they shouldn't. I mean, raisins don't really have anything, you know, flavor-wise.
No, I mean, you get esters and
right.
Prune juice kind of esters.
Right,
and
pruny, you know, oxidized grape.
Right, but diacetyl, that should be, you know, microwave popcorn butter mm-hmm. kind of flavor, aroma.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we will answer more of your questions back after this.
Your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a Certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerone are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Do you support the Brewing Network? Do you brew your own? Are you looking for an economical, fun, and legal way to do both? Subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine and do just that. All year long, Brew Your Own will surprise you, entertain you, and educate you with articles on beer and brewing from authors like the Brewing Network's very own Jamel Zainashev and John Palmer. Each issue is a full pint of brewing techniques, homebrew stories, tips and photos, projects to make yourself, and recipes for the avid home brewer. Get your tough questions answered by Mr. Wizard and polish your style accuracy with Jamel. A portion of every subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so subscribe today at BYO.com/Brewing Network or just click the BYO logo on the Brewing Network homepage and support a fantastic hobby and your favorite broadcaster. Brew Your Own, the how-to homebrew beer magazine.
This September, More Beer is proud to introduce you to JP.
My name is Jason Petros, and I'm the More Beer brand manager.
Award-winning home brewer and brand manager for More Beer.
I've been working for More Beer and home brewing for 13 years. The thing I like best about working at More Beer is being able to bring new products to home brewers across our social network and being able to interact with them in a more casual way.
JP is cutting you some awesome deals this month.
My five favorite things to brew with right now is my 1550 tippy dump system. Second is the wort chiller recirculation arm. I really enjoy being able to do a whirlpool at the end of the boil. Third, French oak cubes. I really enjoy using French oak cubes in my beer for aging 6 months, 8 months. Comes out fantastic. Next is my own personal oak aged dry nibbed oatmeal stout. It's probably my favorite beer to drink that I currently brew. And the last one is Renko Digital Temperature Controller 2-stage. I really enjoy using that, of course, with my temperature-controlled conical fermenter, so I can control both the heat and the cooling cycles at the same time.
All of JP's favorite brewing items are on sale this month only, and only at More Beer.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're having a grand old time here in the old Pacheco steamer. That's what I call the studio. Cause it's
Studio D.
Tad warm.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was cold Studio today, Deuce, so I didn't turn on the AC. Out, yeah. But
if we could open the windows and not hear the hookers crying, the pimps smacking them,
right?
The cop cars racing by.
Yeah,
then we would, but we can't. So
sweat it.
Yeah, let's do the hot nut sweaty thing and answer another question.
Okay. Before I get to the next question, let me announce, Brewbastard asked a good question earlier. So, Brewbastard, I see you in the chat room still. You're not answering me via text. Call us up if you're listening, 888-401-BEER. You had a good question earlier about brewing classic styles and a recipe that you're doing. So, if you want to call and ask us, 888-401-BEER. In the meantime, I had a good question come through from Lee about adding hops to a hot whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
He says he often hears professional brewers talk about it. And he says, I understand that because of the extended time and temperature, both flavor and aroma compounds are extracted, as well as bitterness. However, since the wort is not boiling, these flavor and aroma compounds are not volatilized as strongly. Do the additions act more like flavor additions, mimicking the 15 or 30 minute before flame out? And if so, then how does doing a hot whirlpool of, say, 20 minutes affect those flavor and aroma additions that he did, say, 15 minutes or 5 minutes before?
Yeah, it depends a lot on so many different factors, even just surface area of the kettle versus the volume. The smaller the surface area, the more of those volatile aromatics you're going to retain.
Right.
It depends on when you're talking hot whirlpool, you're talking just below boiling, or you're talking, 170. All those things will affect hop utilization and, the development and off-gassing of these, these compounds. So, it even depends on the hops you're using. Some of these different compounds will volatilize at different, different rates, different temperatures, things like that, and are present in different amounts.
Right.
So it's really difficult to say, but I think the thing that he seems to already know is, bittering is still developing when you're above, what is it, bitter? Isomerization happens at 170-something and above. And then, these other compounds are being driven off. If you can smell them coming out of the kettle, then definitely they're coming out.
Right.
They're going. And so you're kind of developing, more of a perhaps a flavor. On the extreme, you're just developing more bittering.
Right.
It depends on the amount of exchange in your whirlpool as well. If you're whirlpooling a lot and exchanging that surface area often, the more you do that, the more you're going to lose those volatile aromatics.
Yeah, I guess one kind of obvious thing to say is that the cooler the temperature of the whirlpool, they graded a percentage of aromatics to isomerization that's going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
The hotter it is, you know, you're going to get more volatiles coming out of the whirlpool, less going into the beer, but more isomerization occurring from that hop addition in the whirlpool.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's one of the reasons I like to do the whirlpool chilling and quickly drop the temperature down as fast as possible. And you can toss in some hops and kind of lock in those volatile aromatics. You know, all is not lost either way. Let's say you're using a Blickman Therminator, and you can use the Blickman hopback and, you know, run your hot wort through the hopback and through the Therminator and then, you know, right into your fermenter. And what you'll do is you'll you know, express those hop aromatics in the hopback and then lock them in the Therminator really quick and then right into your fermenter. So you get great aromatics that way. So even if you're whirlpooling and you're whirlpooling hot, I think you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hopback and plate chiller, I mean, that's a pretty short dwell time at warm temperatures. So you're going to get a minimum of isomerization and a maximum of aromatics that way.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, an open whirlpool such as professional brewers use, where there's, you know, it's hotter longer, there's a lot more work going through that that group of hops in the whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, they're getting a fair amount of isomerization in that hop.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
I think we have Brewbastard on the phone to ask his classic style questions. Brewbastard, is that you?
Hello. Hi, man.
How are you, brother?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
All right.
So let me get through the question real quick, and then Jamil, I think, has some for you. Brewbastard had written in that he used a Belgian pale ale recipe from Brewing Classic Styles, but added sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Recipe's 86% grain and 14% table sugar, 34 IBUs, mashed at 154. He did a two-hour mash because of a family emergency,
mm-hmm.
and then pitched Y-East 1214.
Mm-hmm.
It went from 1066 to 1005. Said it's got a great taste, but it's too sweet, even though it finishes dry.
Right.
It's aged a little bit and has reduced its sweetness somewhat. Mm-hmm. He wants to know, does the two-hour mash cause this or too much sugar?
Yeah. Well, one question I had. So when you said 86% grain, does that include the Karamunic and the biscuit?
Yeah, there was 12 pounds of Pilsner and then 0.7 pounds of Karamunic 60 and quarter pound of biscuit.
Okay. And then, all right, so, and the 14% sugar. And, you know, I don't think the mash was necessarily the problem. Was the mash temperature dropping over that time while you're gone for 2 hours?
I would think
steady?
So.
Okay.
It probably dropped a few degrees. I don't remember. I didn't actually write down what the temperature was when I poured it out. But it was a pretty hot day here in L.A., so.
And which Y-East did you use, the 1272, or what was it?
It's the Y-East 1214, which I think is the Abbey Ale yeast.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, the sweetness, one of the things we've talked about before is, you know, the perception of sweetness is affected by so many things and not by the finishing gravity. You know, back in the day where people didn't make pitch enough yeast and pay attention to fermentation, then yeah, you know, attenuation was directly related to sweetness because people weren't, you know, the things just weren't fermenting out. And nowadays people are fermenting things out fully, just like a good commercial brewer would do. And the flavor that you get is dependent on, you know, the types of alcohols that are produced. Some of them can be very sweet. Some of them can be bitter, you know, and you can end up with quite a sweet character. Sometimes, you know, you'll do a beer like this, and if you've added simple sugars and you've added, you know, some of those simple sugars could be left over. That's one of the things. It's the kinds of sugars that are left over and, you know, more so than the amount of sugars left over. If they're all long chain dextrins, you could have a 10 Play-Doh finishing gravity, and it still wouldn't taste sweet. It would be thick, but it wouldn't taste sweet. So I'm thinking it's really more the alcohols that were produced from the type of yeast that was used, yeah, and, you know, the fermentation profile.
Could over-oxygenating produce these type of sweetnesses?
Well, you can, from over-oxygenation, you tend to generate more fusel alcohols, and the fusel alcohols can have a sweet character, but often they, well, it often tend to be more solvent.
Yeah.
So, what was the OG again? 1066? 66. Yes. So, yeah, you're getting a fair amount of alcohol sweetness out of that beer.
Yeah.
Especially finishing down, what, 5, I believe? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, the alcohol could be, alcohol sweetness could be a factor in what you're tasting. I doubt it's fusel, so I doubt it over-oxygenation was an issue.
Well, and he also said that, you know, the sweetness is starting to reduce a little bit over time, which, you know, that makes me think.
Residual sugar?
Maybe. You know, have you checked to see if the gravity is changing at all over time?
No, it's kegged.
Yeah. Well, you might pour yourself a bit and degas it. You know, make sure you get all the CO2 out of it, and then check to see if the gravity is changing at all. If it is, then there were still some sweet sugars in there that were causing that. If not, then I think those alcohols that are causing the sweetness are maybe oxidizing and they're becoming more perhaps fruity. Esterification is happening to those alcohols and they're changing character. So that might be the case.
You could take a glass out of the keg and do a forced fermentation on it with some more yeast and see if you can get it to ferment any further.
Yeah, probably not. You know, but if it's changed, since the sweetness has changed, I'd wonder if it's also dropped maybe another point or two. But I would think it's
very, very slightly though.
Yeah,
not much.
Well, see, and that
it's a little bit drinkable.
That could be, you know, perception. You know, what you ate earlier in the day, type of thing. You know, mood, phases of the moon. Who knows? I would think it's alcohol related. I think it's, you know, the types of alcohols that you just got from fermentation from that yeast.
So if I brew it again, maybe less sugar and less, you know, caramunic or something?
Yeah, if you wanted to stick with that yeast.
Yeah. Lower mash temp, maybe.
Lower? Higher? It's 154 to start with. Yeah, I would back off on the sugar a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe... I would just back off on the sugar bit. You know, it's already,
okay, thank you.
You know, and I think you'd be all right. And you might try a different fermentation profile. You know, that'll make a definite difference in, the sweetness, the character of it. So maybe ferment a little cooler to start and see if that does it.
Yeah, I pitched a... Did I pitch at 66? A few days later, 68, and then it went up to about 70. So,
oh, that shouldn't be too bad.
Good few weeks.
Yeah,
to get down that low.
That should be fine. Yeah, I still think it's alcohols, or maybe try a different yeast strain. And the book calls for a Y-yeast 3655. So, you know, I can't really help you now. You know, you change the recipe, you're pretty much screwed.
I added sugar and a different yeast.
That's right.
Right. That's not even the same recipe.
That's right. You're excommunicated. Don't be messing with the recipes. And no, I think I would, you know, maybe cut the sugar back to maybe 10%, and you know, boy, maybe you start at 64 and go up from there, and you know, you get a different character in the beer.
Okay, I'll try that. Yeah, I had no real choice with the yeast, just because this is the only Belgian yeast the store was carrying.
So. Oh, sure. Nothing wrong with that.
It gives a nice flavor, but maybe it's the yeast that's just kicking up that kind of super sweetness.
Yeah, some of them, you know, tend to finish, have a sweeter character than others. And again, it's kind of the alcohols and the esters and things that they produce.
Yeah, I made the same beer, you know, exactly out of Brewing Classic Styles, but with the same yeast with no sugar. Uh-huh. And it produced like a great beer, and I just wanted to kind of give it a little bit more alcohol flavor in there. And
well, you know, one thing you might try is, you know, ferment out the beer normally. You do the beer, and then towards the end of fermentation, you know, when you're starting to raise the temperature, add your simple sugars then, and you know, let it finish out those. And I bet you get a much different character, and it won't have this problem. So that's a good idea.
All right, great. All right, thanks for your help.
Sure. Cheers.
All right, thank you for the call too.
All right. Do you have any more questions, or should we take another short break and then wrap this up?
Yeah, I've got a couple more questions. I think we could break and still get them in.
Okay, let's take a short break. Back after this.
Right. Brew smart.
Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Cutting-edge equipment from Blickman Engineering is designed by brewers to make your brew day shorter, more enjoyable, and to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. Seven Bridges has the best selection of organic ingredients, including over 27 varieties of organic hops at breworganic.com.
Join their mailing list for special deals and regular updates. They've been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for 13 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. And Seven Bridges is the proud host of the 4th Annual National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Take the challenge this fall for a chance to win great prizes, including stainless steel brew kettles and organic brewing ingredients. This year, the challenge will be judged in two locations, on the East Coast at Capital City Brewing in Arlington, Virginia, and on the West Coast at Gordon Biersch in San Jose, California. For complete details, visit breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to great beer and people-friendly business practices. They offer environmentally friendly, fair trade, and fair wage brewing products whenever possible. Seven Bridges, breworganic.com.
Brewers Publications is proud to announce their newest release, Yeast, the Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation by Chris White and Jamil Zainasheff. The Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation is a resource for brewers of all experience levels. Chris and Jamil thoroughly cover yeast selection, storage, handling yeast, and how to culture yeast. Learn how to set up your own yeast lab, the basics of fermentation science and how it affects your beer, plus step-by-step procedures, equipment lists, and a comprehensive troubleshooting guide. Professionals and homebrewers trust Dr. Chris White, who founded White Labs Yeast more than 15 years ago. And Jamil Zainasheff is one of the most respected and most awarded homebrewers in history and co-author of Brewing Classic Styles with John Palmer. Visit Brewers Publications on Facebook for more information. Order your copy at shop.beertown.org or from the Brewing Network. Yeast, the Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation by two of the most trusted names in commercial and home brewing. Proudly available soon from Brewers Publications.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing a live Q&A session here on the Brewing Network. It's the only beer programming I know of that you can find live on the internet. You can actually participate, like a lot of people.
Jamil and Palmer.
Well, that makes it even more exclusive, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yes. All right, but the Brewing Network, we do all these shows live. And that's one of the great things about the Brewing Network. That way you don't have to edit them and whatever crap goes out over the air, it's fine. Okay, next question.
All right, yeah, we'll try to get through a couple more. And those of you asking questions, you know, you can email them ahead of time to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com or feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com, either one of them. If you want to do it during the show, make sure you enter the chat room and give us your questions there, because once the show starts, we're not doing email, we're doing live. Alonzo wrote in his question. He says, I have a Johnson controller and a heat wrap, but I can only ferment as cold as ambient temperatures. So my temps are stable, but I can only go as low as my basement, which is about 76 F during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So his question is, do you have any style recommendations where the beer can start and end in the high 70s to mid 80s without tasting wienery and gross? I like this question because a lot of people ask about what equipment to upgrade to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he apparently can't upgrade. So
there's the pecker style, yes.
Right. So
the
any styles
is an
that'll
important component,
right?
76. Wow, that is, and I assume he's not able to chill his wort below 76. Boy, that's too warm for any style that I know of.
Yeah,
I don't know of any style that can go that start that warm.
Even like the Hefeweizen or the Belgian pales, anything like that.
No.
Wow. Because you want to start lower and then rise.
I mean, you could try Saison. You know, get yourself a fridge. For God's sakes, man. We're trying to get a fridge.
For beer's sake.
Dude.
Okay.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Too bad.
Yeah. When it comes to fermentation control like that, I mean, I built myself an air conditioned box with a $100 air conditioning unit. It works. Yeah. I had to do some tweaks on it to cut out the little thermostat and the override on it, but you know, I hooked that up to the Johnson or Ronco controller. Works great. But you know, by the time you put in the money to build an insulated box or and do all that, you know, you can
buy a fridge.
Yeah.
You can get
buy a used fridge.
I mean, yeah, you've
Craigslist.
I bet you could get a fridge for free for hauling one away. I bet you there's someone out there that will give you a refrigerator.
I've done
you
it.
You can carry it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get a pretty decent one. You know, don't take the total pieces of crap, but you know, you'll find one that's pretty decent. If it's a space requirement, then you know, get rid of something you don't need, like, you know, the wife or child or something like that.
TV.
Yeah. And put that in there. And the other option is just brew during the colder months. You know, that's generally what I do. I live where it gets freaking hot. And so I've got the fridges, but I just don't brew that much during the summer.
I could send him all of my beer recipes that I've ever written, and not one would be adversely affected by fermenting at 76 degrees.
That's a good point. You should do a
like
book of recipes that really don't depend at all on
your skill.
Brewing technique and skill. Yeah.
See?
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and you could know that that not one of them would be worse than the recipe I gave you.
Right.
You know,
you'd always have success.
This could be a big seller. It's like the everybody wins in Little League.
right.
For beer, for brewers.
Yes.
All right, I think we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
This is Alonzo.
Okay.
I'm not liking the response I'm getting, so I thought I'd call and clarify.
All right, what else, Alonzo?
Okay, so the point is not so that I can do one beer in a fridge. Okay, I can get a fridge, you know, they're $50. I want to do three beers, and I don't want to have three fridges.
Uh-huh.
I want to do 3 5-gallon batches at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like I want to be able to do those and have them not come out gross. You know, it's just for my own drinking. And so what I've been doing during the summer is doing like Belgian singles and Belgian pale ales, just like low gravity things that won't taste like super fruity and just come out good and maybe not necessarily style. Like the Belgian single, I would almost call that like a crystal vice. Like it was kind of like a clear Hefeweizen and it all came out like still, it still tasted good. So it's just, that's trying to be, you know, what I'm doing, but three at a time, which is why I can't get, you know, three.
Right. You can also do things like, you know, Cal Ale or American Ale or USO5 yeast, and that'll do okay at those temperatures. You're going to get a lot of green apple character from the.
And that's what I'm trying to avoid. I'm not getting that.
Well, then I'd suggest building a box and sticking a window air conditioning unit in it.
Or, well, you know, if you get a fridge that'll hold two fermenters, which is not difficult to do, then
chest,
you know,
freezer.
One of I've got a fridge that it's also got a freezer on it, so I can use the freezer portion for, you know, like making the wife happy. But the, you know, you can run one if you get a dual stage controller. One can run and just cold. And then, you know, you make like a lager or something like that, or, you know, a Kolsch or something like that. And then the other one, you're running at ale temperatures with the heat wrap. And so you can do two at the same time and do two different beers at two different, totally different temps. So that's one way I do it to maximize the space and not have three fridges running. That takes care of two. If you got a big enough fridge, you could certainly do three that way.
I'm wondering if anybody has actually tried starting a beer that hot. And like, you know, it's controlled. It's with the digital controller, so it's not getting like too cold at night where, you know, the yeast will drop and under attenuate. So like, I wonder if anyone's tried that, because
that certainly helps. That definitely helps, but you know, it's that initial phase that you know is the problem with it that warm. Here's one thing you could do though is you know, start the beers in the fridge where, you know, you can control the temp, and for the growth phase of the yeast you can have more control and you can go, you know, 68 through 70, and then after the first, you know, 48 hours you can pull it out and just use the firm wrap and go warmer from there. And that way you only need the fridge for 2 days.
Yeah, so 48 hours. I was doing that. I did that with your Saison, actually, which is in the keg there. I have a keg fridge. You know, it's like a dedicated fridge. It's not the wife's fridge. It's my fridge.
Right.
And so I put that, or the one carboy in there, but I could only do one at a time once a week, or maybe even once every 2 weeks. But I like your idea of taking it out after just 48 hours. I didn't think of doing that after such a small amount of time.
Yeah, all your growth is really pretty much done in 48 hours. It can actually be done, you know, as soon as, you know, 18 hours or sooner. But, you know, it should, no matter what your pitch rate, unless it's really, really low, it should all be done by about 48 hours. So
what kind of flavors do you think I'd be avoiding in doing that just for the first 48 hours? Like, I was thinking just fusel alcohol would be what I was avoiding. Like, I guess, like, fruity things would...
Yeah, it changes your esters. It changes things like, you know, acetaldehyde and, you know, things like that.
Pronunciation.
Yeah. You know, it's gonna you know, affect all those things. And, you know, even yeast health for, you know, later in fermentation, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to attenuate well on higher gravity beers is going to be affected by that.
Right. Okay, well, yeah, I definitely like that idea of after 48 hours. That way I can do, you know, two in 1 week.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you called. You forced us to think a little bit further into solutions.
You guys are just clowning around, and I thought I'd actually try to get some.
I know. We're a couple of asshats around here. What do you expect? We're sitting here drinking. And, you know, what do we care what happens to your beer? I mean, really.
Right.
You know, unless we're coming over to your house to have a few, it's really, you know, our priorities are completely different.
Thanks, Alonzo.
Thanks, brother. I already pre-ordered the book.
Awesome.
Attaboy.
There you go.
All right, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
And just while you were answering, a couple people reiterating your first answer. San Diego Matt has a $100 fridge that fits 3 6.5-gallon carboys.
Yeah.
PSU homebrewer said, check Google for freezers. There's a 7-cubic-foot one from the Home Depot for about $199. And also fits 3 carboys.
Right. So. But I see what he's saying. It's like, look, you know, how do you... the question isn't, you know, where do I get cheap fridges?
Right.
He's
right.
Like, I can go ahead and buy fridges, but, you know, how do you maximize, you know, what do you do to maximize the, you know, potential of one fridge, you know, instead of buying multiples? He's got the money. He's got the... You do whatever he wants, but how do you maximize it? So I think that was actually a good question. Made
Great.
Us think a little bit more.
All right. I think that's about all we have time for today.
Oh, it's over?
I think so.
Dang. We're having so much fun.
I still got beer left.
Uh-oh.
Show must not be over. We still got beer. All right. Well, that was another good Q&A show, and... we'll be doing another one. Every third show, we decided we would do live Q&A. So if you enjoy this, you know, find out when we're doing these shows. You sign up on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll be
I
sure
like
to
call in
to,
aspect,
you know,
too.
Yeah. We'll do more call-ins. I like that, too. Anyways, until you know, next time, make sure you're checking out all the things the Brewing Network has to offer. A lot of different shows. Sunday Session, Canyon Brew It, the Homebrew Chef's coming up. That other show that shouldn't be mentioned, Lunch Meat, is out there as well. And lots of good products in the Brewing Network store. Go out and check that out. You can buy the yeast book. You can buy Brewing Classic Styles, How to Brew, all signed by the authors. And also don't forget, I don't know, don't forget something. Don't forget to hold on loosely, but don't let go.
And watch out for rug burns.
Yeah, brew strong.
Pretty strong, everybody.